We interrupt this broadcast to bring you a special news bulletin direct via satellite from our on-the-spot task force.
No sports, no rock, no information for mindless chatter. We're your station.
Stand by for news.
News on the mark.
Newsroom in New York.
You have tuned in turn on the news, the weekly newscast from the radio network, with all the radio coverage of the radio. Now with computerized news readers, with fewer meddling humans, and more aggregated reporting and automated music. Tune in turn on the news each week for the latest news, radio art, and more from our robot reporters, making sure you hear both sides, good and evil, every time you turn on the news.
And then I just, there's good news. Good evening.
I know it's strange, but my brain's gone really insane. And I'm off the chain, sipping on a fifth of the golden grain. I feel like slapping somebody today. Slapping somebody today. I feel like slapping somebody today. Slapping somebody today. Slapping somebody today. I know it's strange, but my brain's gone really insane. And I'm off the chain, sipping on a fifth for the golden grain. I feel like slapping somebody today. Slapping somebody today. I feel like slapping somebody today. Slapping somebody today. Slapping somebody today.
Jada, I love you. G.I. Jane 2, can't wait to see it. All right? that was a nice one. Okay. I'm out here. Uh-oh. Richard. Oh, wow.
Wow, indeed. The old hitch slap. It's now a part of our lives forever. We will never stop talking about this. It was so shocking. The only thing I can really compare it to is when Mike Tyson bit Evander Holyfield's ears. Even Kanye was like, you went on stage and did what an award show? And the weirdest part was that initially Will Smith laughed at that joke. But then he must have looked over and noticed that Jada was not amused. He's like, uh-oh, I better do something. And boy, did he do something. I mean, in one stunning moment, the night went from Oscars so what to Oscars so what? No one could have predicted the most controversial movie of 2022 would be G.I. Jane, but it was. This was the Hollywood version of your drunk uncle starting a fight, ruining the wedding, and then standing up and giving a long toast to the bride and groom. I was watching, like most people at home, and I said to my wife, well, they did a really good job with that punch. It looks so real. And she's like, yeah, they did. About 3 seconds later, we realized it was because it was real.
Oh, that's it. You insulted my honor.
You what now?
I demand satisfaction.
Oh. I had hoped that it was a bit, but that hope quickly turned to dust. A dark sadness filled my home. A darkness I couldn't escape. Had the Oscars lost its magic? My sister Lacey called me and we screamed. We screamed a long, loud scream of excitement, terror? I don't know, but we screamed it with all of America. We tried to stay engaged, but there was no more show after that. There was no more anything. The once fluffy couch I was sitting on suddenly felt hard and unwelcoming. My heated blanket went cool. The sweet tea I was enjoying lost all its flavor. The Oscars took everything I thought I knew and flushed it down the toilet in this new world. Could I survive? I know now why they don't have a category for best horror movie, because
the best horror movie is the Oscars.
And then it happened. The announcer said, and the Oscar for best actor goes to, and all of America collectively held their breath, bit their cuticles, and then Will Smith won for best actor. His acceptance speech lasted for 5 minutes and 25 seconds, and I did not breathe for 5 minutes and 25 seconds. The earth cracked open, and I slipped through. I heard echoes of, I'm sorry, but never to Chris Rock. I'm not sure what he said because, again, I'm in the center of the earth at this point. It comes to an end and I scroll Twitter and I read jokes and think pieces and opinions about it. And while I felt like I had seen something horrible and private that made me feel great shame, I found out everyone in America felt the same way I did.
Salting Chris Rock and then winning the Oscar, it's like storming out of the house after breaking up with your girlfriend, then coming back in because you forgot your keys, you know? Donald Trump surprisingly has weighed in on the incident at the Oscars.
So I was watching the Radical Left Oscars tonight. How about that? And all of a sudden, I'm watching The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air. Okay, we used to respect The Fresh Prince. But he never became the Fresh King of Bel-Air because he failed like a dog. So they tried to give him a new movie. They said, oh, you're King Richard now, sir. But no, you don't get to just have different kingdoms. Either you're the King of Bel-Air or you're a failed prince. You don't get to just become King Richard. So he's very upset, and he walks on stage, and he walked right up to Dave Chappelle, who made a joke about his wife. And I have total respect for my wife, so I appreciate when a man stands up for his wife, because I have so much respect for my wife, I won't even tell them when I'm cheating. I let the tabloids do that, because it's called respect for your wife. So he got up, and he looked Kevin Hart right in the face and slapped the crap out of him. And I respect that. But then the radical left Oscars audience, you didn't see any police. They defunded the Oscars police because not a single officer showed up. I wonder why. And Bill Cosby was left on stage just trying to tell jokes while the failed Prince of Bel-Air was screaming curse words at him. And the radical left, they applaud. They go, this is diversity. Black on black crime at our Oscars. It's a beautiful thing. Yes, let's watch boring movies and watch the failed Prince of Bel-Air, just run and attack Richard Pryor, and it's a total disgrace. So we wish Eddie Murphy a quick recovery from the attack by Bill Smith, okay? And, we're never watching the Oscars again. This is why they can't nominate somebody like Kirk Cameron or Scott Baio or Kevin Sorbo, because they wouldn't allow this. They would step in right away with a strong Second Amendment and stop the violence. So good luck, Academy Awards, radical left losers, crime going rampant. So sad.
Donald Trump's personal sway over the Republican Party seems as strong as ever, even if at times the candidates he backs fall flat. In some places, Trump-endorsed candidates are struggling in GOP primaries and having a hard time raising money. But in other places, like Texas, his endorsement was still very powerful. Trump keeps strongly hinting that he's going to run in 2024, but his crowds aren't exactly getting bigger. A reporter at Trump's rally in Georgia over the weekend tweeted, I've covered more than 24 Trump rallies. This is the smallest crowd I've seen at a rally of his in Georgia since he won the 2016 election. The reporter also posted a photo from the event that showed plenty of empty seats. There's even video of people in the crowd filing out early as Trump was still speaking.
Leaders who are going to save your state from this anarchy and betrayal. Your state?
You can hear Trump yelling something about anarchy and betrayal. He sounds like he's reviewing last night's Oscars. There was anarchy, betrayal, chaos, and for some reason, a tribute to Pulp Fiction, and yet, all these years later, we still don't know what was in the briefcase. Why won't they tell us what was in the briefcase? Probably votes for Biden. Trump's crowd was still bored out of their minds, even though he was busting out his greatest hits. In many ways, Trump remains the most powerful presence in the GOP, but there are some early signs that his personal grip over the party could be slipping. And I certainly don't want to jinx it, given that I've written him off before and been very wrong. The point is, Trump's personal sway over the GOP may or may not be waning. Only time will tell. But even if Trump himself fades away, Trumpism and the Republican Party he molded will very much remain. Aspiring Republicans are all desperate to mimic him, and the central animating force of Republican politics today is still the rejection of democracy. Just look at Georgia gubernatorial candidate David Perdue, an ex-senator who's trying to court Trump's base by repeating his lies about the 2020 election and blaming the current Republican governor, Brian Kemp, for allowing Democrats to steal the election.
Let me be very clear, very clear. In the state of Georgia, thanks to Brian Kemp, our elections in 2020 were absolutely stolen. And I'm fighting right now to find out what happened in 2020 and make sure that those people responsible for that fraud in 2020 go to jail.
Trump's crowds will chant, lock them up, about anyone now. You could be Hillary Clinton or the ultra-conservative governor of Georgia. Doesn't matter. If you cross Trump, they want you in jail. Next, they're going to turn their ire on wind and umbrellas and the sun. And there are times when I have to say, even Trump doesn't seem to have his heart in it. Trump's whole bit is trolling. He trolls the media and liberals, and his disciples have picked up the mantle, like Florida Congressman Matt Gaetz, the only person on Earth, this is interesting, whose Funko Pop would have a smaller head. Gaetz appeared at the rally and once again floated an idea he's pitched before, to make Trump Speaker of the House if Republicans win the midterms in November. But Trump did not have much of a reaction.
Give us the ability to fire Nancy Pelosi, take back the majority, impeach Joe Biden, and I'm going to nominate Donald Trump for Speaker of the United States House of Representatives. Thank you very much. Thank you, everybody. Well, that was interesting.
He sounds like a dad whose teenager just made him watch Euphoria for the first time. Well, that was very interesting. Hey, I'm gonna come to school with you tomorrow. Nope. For the whole day. So regardless of what happens to Trump himself, Trumpism is very much the heart of the GOP and here to stay. And it's not just the Matt Gaetzes and David Perdues of the world. Republicans of the highest echelons of power have fully embraced the conspiracy theories and authoritarian impulses that define Trumpism. Last week, for example, we learned about bombshell text messages from Ginny Thomas, the wife of Supreme Court Justice Clarence Thomas, to Trump's chief of staff, Mark Meadows, pushing the Trump administration to overturn the election.
Tonight, our chief election and campaign correspondent Robert Costa and Bob Woodward have uncovered text messages between the wife of Supreme Court Justice Clarence Thomas and President Trump's top aide, in which she repeatedly pushed to overturn the 2020 presidential election.
The first message from Thomas came the day before Joe Biden was declared the winner of the 2020 presidential election. "Do not concede," she wrote. "It takes time for the army who is gathering for his back."
Holy that sounds like something Saruman would say in Lord of the Rings. "It takes time for the army who is gathering for his back." That is very Shakespearean for someone named Ginny. There's not a lot of Ginnies in Shakespeare.
Thomas is an extreme election fraud truther. And last Thursday, we found out that after the election, she sent a barrage of text messages imploring the former president's chief of staff, Mark Meadows, to take steps to overturn the vote. That is huge. The wife of a sitting Supreme Court justice conspired with the president's chief of staff to throw out the results of a free and fair election. And she never even invented a pillow. Now, in one message, how hard could it be to invent a pillow? Put something in something else and lie on it. In one message, Thomas urged Meadows to save us from the left taking America down and to, quote, release the Kraken. A reference to the B-movie Clash of the Titans. We should have known The Sound of Treason would be a random movie quote. Who can forget the immortal words of John Wilkes Booth? "Sic semper tyrannis, this is Sparta, you can't handle the truth, my wife." Not all of Thomas's texts were succinct because she also quoted language from random websites that said, "Biden crime family and ballot fraud co-conspirators, fake stream media reporters, etc., are being arrested and detained for ballot fraud right now and over coming days and will be living in barges off Gitmo to face military tribunals for sedition," and then added, "I hope this is true." What the? You can't put out that much information and then undercut it with a, I don't know. Darwin did not end the Origin of Species with huge if true.
And let's not forget the reason this is so shocking is Trump was open about his desire to have the Supreme Court help him stay in power. He said it repeatedly and took his case to the Supreme Court. There was even a case where Trump sued to block the National Archives from releasing any records related to January 6th. And the only justice to side with Trump in that 8-1 ruling was Clarence Thomas. He sided with Trump in a case to block the release of records that could have potentially implicated his own wife. That is a slap in the face to the Constitution. So it's a massive scandal, although I get it. If I was saying crazy like that, my wife would want those texts blocked, too. And it wasn't just Ginny Thomas. This morning, the Washington Post also reported on Ted Cruz's last-ditch battle to keep Trump in power, including working directly with Trump to concoct a plan that came closer than widely realized to keeping him in power. Of course, Ted Cruz was involved. If there's a rotting, insidious idea somewhere, anywhere, it's more likely than not that Ted Cruz had a role in it. And these two were apparently in constant communication throughout the months-long coup attempt that culminated in the January 6th riot. According to the Post, 2 days after the 2020 election, Trump tweeted the falsehood that I won this election by a lot. Around the time he sent that tweet, the president talked with Cruz on the phone. Cruz was also dining near the Capitol on the evening of December 8th, 2020, when he received an urgent call from Trump. A lawsuit had just been filed at the Supreme Court designed to overturn the election. Would you be willing to argue the case, Trump asked Cruz. Sure, I'd be happy to, Cruz said. He responded. First of all, I have a hard time believing their phone conversations were that brief. I don't think Trump has ever made a short phone call in his entire life. Remember when he used to call in to the Fox and Friends while they just sat there without blinking for an hour, just staring into the void, wondering, am I dead and is this my punishment? So Cruz was deeply involved in Trump's effort to overthrow the election. Fortunately for us, Cruz's last-ditch effort to overturn the election went about as well as his last-ditch effort to get on a plane in Montana.
A new video this morning showing the moments before airport security was called on Texas Senator Ted Cruz. He missed his flight check-in Sunday in Bozeman, Montana, and options to reschedule were limited because of spring break. So the senator got in a heated conversation with airport employees over the issue.
Cops were even called to calm down the Texas Republican. It happened at Bozeman Yellowstone International Airport in Montana. A social media posting claimed that Cruz wouldn't calm down and was heard asking, do you know who I am?
Ted Cruz strikes me as one of those people who hopes the answer to do you know who I am is no. Do you know who I am? I don't. Thank God. I am but a weary traveler who seeks passage home to my loved ones and not, I assure you, a noxious toady hell-bent on destroying American democracy. I've never even been to Cancun. And then today, after all those major bombshells, a federal judge wrote in a new court filing that Trump's attempted coup was more likely than not a crime, adding that the illegality of the plan was obvious. Yeah, man, no shit. I'm tired of waiting for judges and DAs and special committees to tell us what we all saw with our own eyes was probably not legal. Why is this taking so long? This is like if a character in season 8 of Game of Thrones said, hey, any word on whether or not winter is coming? It's like, where have you been? You literally have heard no update on that.
The January 6th Select Committee continues to do their work, and today they got some good news that spells trouble for former President Don Con Jovi. Because a federal judge ruled that the former president more likely than not committed a crime in trying to block the confirmation of Biden's win. I believe he cited the legal precedent of no v. Sherlock. The bombshell, The bombshell is part of the ongoing investigation into disgraced lawyer John Eastman. Eastman was the law professor who believed that former Vice President Mike Pence could just reject individual states' electoral college votes. First of all, no. Second of all, you want to give somebody unlimited power and you pick Mike Pence? He doesn't even have the power to be in a room with a woman who's not his wife. The committee has been trying to get Eastman's records and emails for months now. He's been claiming attorney-client privilege, but that doesn't apply to lawyers who help their clients commit a crime. And in this case, the judge found that the illegality of the plan was obvious. Yeah. Eastman. Yes. Hell yes. Say it. Eastman probably should not have labeled the folder, Crime Ideas Keep Out. The judge added that every American, and certainly the President of the United States, knows that in a democracy, leaders are elected, not installed. Now, normally, this would be a great point. I agree. It's a lovely thing to say. And normally that would be a good point, but the former president doesn't know too much about the American government. He thinks the Supreme Court is just a regular court with extra sour cream and guac. Thanks to this ruling, Eastman has been ordered to turn over 100 emails. Hell yes, they're getting his emails. Now the committee's gonna know whether the former president tried to turn our country into a banana republic, and they'll know if Banana Republic offered Eastman 40% off selected men's separates.
Good people, this is your leader talking. I would like to promise you, just a second.
Promise them this, that, and the other thing.
I promise you this, that, and the other thing. So everybody, go home, kick off your shoes, turn on the TV, and relax. But that's an order.
The evidence of a criminal attempt to overthrow American democracy is so overwhelming and involves so many figures at the highest levels of the Republican Party, it's hard to fathom. And yet still, so many of our judges and prosecutors and elected officials saw what happened on January 6th, shrugged, and said,
well, that was interesting.
Former President Koopa Loompa. The January 6th committee is closing in on him. Yesterday, a federal judge ruled that the former president more likely than not committed a crime in trying to block the confirmation of Biden's win. There seems to be a poorly executed cover-up going on here. You see, the committee has the White House phone records from January 6th. And today we found out there's a gap in the former president's phone logs of 7 hours and 37 minutes, including the period when the Capitol was being violently assaulted. Instead, for all of those hours, all the White House phone records just say, scam likely. So, no calls all day long. If you think the investigators are worried, imagine how they feel at Wendy's. It's been 7 hours and he hasn't called. The Baconators are piling up. Something's not right. Check the dumpster. Maybe he fell asleep in there again. And see, he's a raccoon. The president was a raccoon.
What we see increasingly is some folks are trying to do the cover-up around the president's actions. We have these 7.5 hours of, you know, where did the records go? What are the call logs and the president's schedule?
Yeah, the second coming of Rosemary Woods.
It is indeed, except exponentially worse. 18 minutes to almost 8 hours.
Here's the thing. We know the former president spoke to people like Kevin McCarthy and Jim Jordan during those 7 hours and 37 minutes, which is why the House panel is now investigating whether he communicated that day through back channels, including using burner phones. The former president denied the whole thing, claiming, I have no idea what a burner phone is. To the best of my knowledge, I have never even heard the term.
You know how Trump had to turn over his White House call logs from January 6th to Congress? Well, there's reportedly a 7-hour gap in his phone records from that day. So now the big question is, which White House toilet did he flush them down? The Select Committee is said to be looking into whether Trump used a burner phone during the insurrection. So Trump released a statement saying, I have no idea what a burner phone is. To the best of my knowledge, I've never even heard the term, which is interesting because his former national security advisor, John Bolton, today revealed that he and Trump have spoken about how people use burner phones to avoid having their calls scrutinized. Whenever Trump doesn't know about something, he claims to know everything about it. Like, I know more about windmills than everybody. When it comes to things he might get in trouble for, all of a sudden he knows, hey, burner phones? I never heard of them. Hookers? What are those? Meanwhile, Trump's imaginary son-in-law Jared Kushner is expected to appear before the House Select Committee this week. He bought a suit at Gap Kids. He's ready to plead the fifth about the sixth. You know, people might not remember, but at various points, Jared was in charge of peace in the Middle East, the border wall, the opioid crisis, criminal justice reform, and the pandemic response team, which I think that's everything, right? I mean, Trump is like, here's the keys to the Oval Office. There's juice boxes in the fridge for Don Jr. and Eric. If you need me, I'll be on the can.
So, yes, the election was stolen. It's a total disgrace. And what'd you think of that speech? Very strong speech I gave, right? You know, and you got Rudy Giuliani saying trial by combat. That's what happens when the shoe polish starts leaking from your brain. He had diarrhea pouring out of his forehead, and that's what happens. But we love him. Very strong, very patriotic. So we are not doing any coup. We're not doing any. It's a French word anyway. Why would I do a French word? I use strong. words because I speak American and I use the American language, so we don't do weak French words. But now we're definitely not doing coup, and I'm definitely not hanging up to pick up a burner phone because I don't even know what a burner phone is. So bye-bye, strong patriotism, total rule of law. Okay, see you later. Hanging up now. No more conversations. Okay, so we've got, now we've got the special extra secure phone. I didn't even include the string, you know, that you just, because I'll try, I've watched a lot of movies, and those, if you use the cup with a string, they'll wiretap the string. That's why it's called a wiretap, because it's like a wire, and they tap it and say, hello, who's there? I think we hear conspiracy. So now we're doing a strong coup, let everybody in. Tell Bobert and Marjorie Thomas Greene and the wheelchair kid and Holly, who, you know, Holly's like a deep voiced Pence. I don't think that guy likes women. But the point is, tell them and even tell Ted Cruz, even though he should be good at conspiracy, because as you know, his father tried to murder, who was it? Lincoln? He murdered somebody. Nasty Cuban. So, yes, we're doing a coup, and that's all. We're going to take back our country, and Sleepy Joe can't become president because, well, they just can't, okay? It would be very embarrassing to me. I don't like, the only time I like to lose is with bankruptcy. It's called strong business. So let's do it. Let's coup.
The preceding show was recorded at Wave Farms WGXC in the Hudson Valley in New York State.